Mini episode 722 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 722 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have a great guest who we've had on the show a number of times previously. A lot of times when we've had him on, it's been more or less around football season, and we have talked fantasy football with him on many different occasions because that is something for which he is known. Many years of dispensing advice through Fox Sports, through his great website, SwollenDome.com. But again, with everything that he does with Fox Sports Radio, he covers subjects much further and wider than that, as do we on this show, which is, after all, a show where nothing is off topic. So it's a pleasure to be able to go a little bit broader with him here this time around to talk about some of the things he's been talking about recently, the sports and I would say sports-ish headlines here in spring 2016, including an excellent video essay that he just posted at his website, SwollenDome.com. Of course, you can follow him at Swollen Dome on Twitter. And again, catch him during the week on Fox Sports Radio. Of course, you can catch him 8 to 10 Pacific time, Monday through Friday with Jason Smith, and then on Sundays, 6 to 10 Pacific time with Dan Beyer. I tend to catch a little bit more of that show here, being in the Eastern time zone and having to get to bed on a timely basis during the week. But enjoy whenever I get a chance to catch him. And as I've joked about in the past, there have been a couple times on Sunday mornings when I have walked into Sunday Mass a little bit later than I should have, just because I couldn't quite turn off the radio in the car and get hauling my late butt into church. So I am kind enough, of course, not to hold him personally responsible for that. My pastor, that may not be another story. But regardless, it's always a pleasure to get to speak to the great Michael Harmon on the program. Michael, welcome back to the FDH Lounge, sir. How are you today?
What is going on? You're talking a little Chicago baseball. My White Sox are for real, buddy. My White Sox are for real. The Cubs, I have to deal with them as I do. But the White Sox, figuring out the back end of the rotation, Latos, a nice early spring surprise. We don't expect that. That's turning back into a pumpkin at some point, so you take what you get. But eventually the bats will actually start working, and that's one thing that hasn't happened very much during the early success.
Yeah, that's very counterintuitive. So, yeah, let's start there. Because, again, Well, see, here in America's North Coast, here in Cleveland, I see a good degree of the White Sox myself throughout the course of the year. So, yeah, sure. You're absolutely right about that. The bats not having really much to do with the success thus far, very kind of counterintuitive. You look at the Cubs, and everybody, even their grandmother, saw them coming this year. But the White Sox, yeah, I mean, what an unbelievable story that would be if the Cubs had to go through the White Sox to win that first world title in all these years. It almost seems preordained as far as how the story would have to go.
I'm already pondering my travel and asking for studio time in Chicago, leaving out of Los Angeles and just taking up residence in Chicago for a week should that happen. No question about it. But, yeah, you look at the Cubs and built for success and, you know, the Arrieta suspicions and talking about how flattering it is. I don't know that you want people knocking on that door, though, because there's a lot of media members that the eyebrows have been raised for a good year plus and wondering how what was a pitcher who couldn't hang in the AL East. Now, part of it is just going to the National League. Let's call it what it is. You're going to win in your ERA immediately because three of the batters can't hit in your lineup each
right.
and every night. So you're already that much better in terms of your ERA, WHIP, and your overall performance. But we go back all the way in his minor league stats, there was some goodness there, and a guy that they were very high on, and then it didn't come together in Baltimore. I'm not surprised he's had success in Chicago. I nobody would have predicted what he's become, and now, you know, a guy that's muttered in the same breath as the best pitchers in baseball, which is what he's been for the last 18 months. But that doesn't come out without a lot of head-scratching and people turning their eyes to try to figure out exactly how that happens, because not too long ago we were doing that for pretty much everybody under the sun if they suddenly started to produce after years of ineffectiveness and, well, minor league appearances for Juan Arrieta. So that's something that'll be with the Cubs for the bulk of the season. But if they're winning on the north side with all the money they've put into the stadium, the fact that the Ricketts families keeps buying up the rooftops to shut up all the owners that kept trying to sue them, it'll be the best outdoor bar in America to the next level. That's what it's been forever, and now they've got expectations.
They do, and justifiably so. But on the subject of Arrieta, and I hear what you're saying about all this, although, again, we did hear last year about mechanical changes that he's made, and that might not account for, again, all of the improvements. Some of the improvements may have come from other areas, and not even necessarily nefarious ones. But in some of the commentary I'm hearing, it seems a little disingenuous when people are talking about him and invoking the fifth round pedigree in terms of where he was drafted. Because I can tell you, Michael, years ago, in a deep keeper league, I had the guy when he was in the Baltimore minor league system, and I was licking my chops. I remember when this guy was hot stuff and he was going to be, okay, maybe not as great as what we've seen now, but there are some people right now, I think it's a little bit of revisionist thinking, acting like there was never any expectations for the guy. This guy, as you well know in the fantasy industry, this is what you would call one of these post-hype guys. He was a breakout. He was a late bloomer. I mean, but there's a lot of commentary right now swirling around the fact that just because he was a fifth-round draft choice that he kind of came out of nowhere, which is ridiculous.
Well, I think part of it is just normally pitchers don't bloom 7 years later is, I think, the thinking when it comes to this, right? Pitchers don't normally bloom in their late 20s. Right? He is now 30 years old as he embarks on this season, and I think that's part of where the suspicion and discussion lies, is not that you don't find it, but usually not that far down the road. Now, are there outliers? Sure, we can always find one or two that are in the pool for us, but and to me, I've always just been of the I really doesn't matter, because you're not catching any of these guys unless they're really foolish. It's the same thing in football. They say, well, we know that we speculate that there's this huge percentage of guys on stuff. They know when the tests are coming. Baseball players, if there's no reason to suspect you, you don't get tested. Unless you're Pat McAfee, punter of the Colts, who jokes about it openly, normally the cup doesn't find its way to you again. So for Jake Arrieta, you know, you hope, you know, that for the example that – again, they invoke the kid card and always get a little uncomfortable with it. But a guy that certainly has captured the imagination of a lot of kids in Chicago, and when you're talking about trying to keep youth dialed into baseball, he's become a great story of perseverance as it is right now. You just hope that it's fully on the level.
Yeah, and for the good of the game, that it stays that way as far as people's perceptions. You're right about that. On a number of sports and sports-ish topics that you've been talking about recently here, perhaps it would be unfortunate to use what we were talking about with PEDs as a segue point to talking about WrestleMania 32. Instead, I will use going on location. You talked about going on location in Chicago. If there's a World Series there, you were on location in Dallas. I'll use that one here. And I'm curious on your thoughts on being there, because I got to tell you, I was at Fastlane the month before, and I see some kind of similarities in terms of and you describing the experience, and you were talking about on Twitter about the great moment of Shawn Michaels and Austin coming out, which some people were kind of crapping on because of the context that it was in as far as the young guys. It seems like, if I can discern this, that you kind of had the same experience I did, which is that being there sort of covers up a lot of the boils that would otherwise be on the surface. Because I got to tell you, I was watching Mania 32 at my baseball draft, and we were all profoundly dissatisfied with it, even having a very, very low bar of expectations going in. But to be there, to be in the house, 101,000 people, the star power that was there in various ways, I'm guessing it kind of covered up a lot of ills for you, because that's how it was for me being at Fastlane. I definitely enjoyed Fastlane more than I would have at home. Do you get the sense you're kind of like that with WrestleMania?
Oh, that's exactly it. I mean, my brothers and I mean, for those I went on Twitter and I rant about it on radio. This was something that my brothers and I used to do with great regularity as teenagers, with selling trading cards and hustling paper routes and odd jobs, whatever, is we'd go to the matches every week. Now, for us, it was the AWA and that kind of fun that usually came down, WWF, you know, because there's the great divide in Chicago between the north side and the south side, and my parents weren't going to let us go to the north side. That just was not going to happen. So going out to the Rosemont Horizon, as they saw it being north side, was not going to happen. So we used to go to the UIC Pavilion, so we'd see the Road Warriors and the ilk all the time. Out of the blue, my little brother decided back in November, he goes, "Hey, if I got tickets, would you go?" Okay, sure. Thought nothing of it. About a month later, right before Christmas, the work he does, he piles up miles all over the place traveling, that he all of a sudden I got all this stuff about hotels and flights and everything in my inbox. I'm like, all right, this looks like it's happening. So when we went, part of it was, you know, the throwback to being kids. The other was, you know, we pay attention to it. I got a couple of guys that work in the building with me. They work on Nikki Sixx's show, of course, from Motley Crue. Works in the same building just a couple of feet from us. And they're big wrestling guys, so they're filling me in on the backstories of some of the younger guys and all this. And I was going for the spectacle. And that's exactly what I found. And, you know, we were in the parking lot. I'd finished my Sunday morning show, and we went to the parking lot early, maybe with a giant bag of adult beverages, maybe not. And we made a lot of new friends as we sat. And we just the different costumed guys, the T-shirt. You want to talk about branding? You want to talk about the importance of knowing your audience? WWE gets a lot of things wrong. They got that right in so many ways. I mean, I watch people at the kiosk. It's like, all right, which of those shirts do you need? It's like, I need all three of them. It's like, who for? And I'm doing informal polls as I'm standing in line watching people spending $100 bill after $100 bill. Like, yeah, there's three of those. Well, I need one of each. Not for my kids, just for me, because I need each of the extra large. So, you know, almost the cult-like effect of it, which was amazing. So we get inside, and, you know, part of me was wondering how much they're going to push the narratives and be able to of the young guys, particularly with all the injuries that have befallen a lot of their stars, guys on the comeback trail. And so when they trotted out legend after legend, much like they had at WrestleMania 31, I was entertained as hell. It was fun. But at the same time, you're going, how does this advance the narrative? Because each of these guys is getting a big payday to come in for one day. Even Shaq, for the love of Pete, shows up for the Battle Royal. And then what do you do to push it? I mean, because Reigns isn't getting over. They're booing him. Cena comes back, and while the music is playing and while we all love the prank call based around it and all of that we've seen go viral, you know, they were booing him and making fun of him as he went to the ring. So it's like, all right, how do you build on these young guys? New Day was the only one to really get a reaction. So it was interesting from that perspective, but being in that crowd, far more entertaining. Just watching little kids' faces light up as the pyrotechnics went off, and they're arguing with me about who's going to win a match. I argue for a living, so it was a lot of fun. I was entertaining the crowd, getting the kids hyped up as they got to hour four of what became a seven-hour event if you were live in the stadium.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that didn't make anybody there feel any more enlivened during that endless main event. But I want to get your thoughts then through these sort of newer, fresher eyes that you have as far as the current crop of stars that they have. The one person, when we were doing our WrestleMania preview with Evan Roberts of WFAN beforehand, that we were talking about, that we were expecting, and that we quite frankly thought was going to go over but didn't, who we think is going to be one of the biggest breakout stars in the company, Sasha Banks. And she had that great entrance with Snoop Dogg, and from when I was listening on TV, it sounded like it blew the roof off the place when she was coming out to the ring. She's one of the people, the only people in the company that they chant for spontaneously, and to me, she just exudes that star power of a Rock, of a Ric Flair, of one of those really super magnetic kind of people. I'm wondering what you were picking up on being there as far as the live reaction of the crowd to Sasha.
Oh, that was absolutely the case. I mean, absolutely huge, and a lot of people before the match. I mean, that, you want to talk about the merchandising of that? They very successful with the Sasha Banks character and bringing out Snoop. I mean, it gets everybody hyped to a whole other level, of course. But you know, you look at the that was the best match on the card. Ostensibly,
yep.
Take out all the hype, take out any laughs that you got from, you know, The Rock or Stone Cold drinking 14 beers. The fact of the matter is you actually had a technically sound, very entertaining, high energy match. Now, short term, I think because of Ric Flair, who evidently got himself in a little bit of a situation at Logan Airport here on Wednesday morning, more details to come on that. But in the short term, they get his daughter over because, well, he's there to be a valet or whatever he is to her. And you can build on the Banks character. You can't have it all go over the top at once. You did enough introducing the title. And for a thing like WrestleMania, when you're trying to bring in not only your hardcore folks, but your casual people, you know, old guys like me that want to have a laugh and pay homage to the history of it, Then you bring out the old guys and let them run the show and have their fun. Banks will have her time. It's just a matter of when they want to push that side of the promotion.
Yeah, I mean, they decided evidently that old cliche that the money is in the chase. And the only thing about that is, I mean, and I hate to use this guy as an example because he's actually been a regular guest on our show and a super nice guy, and I like him, but Lex Luger. He showed how you could push that a little bit too far because they always thought that the money was in the chase. We'll hold off a little while later, and then the fans lose faith. And hopefully that won't happen with her because, again, they really, really got something with her. On another sports-ish type topic, your video essay that you did at SwollenDome.com, really enjoyed it, about Prince and about some of the reaction from the sports world to his passing. And wanted to get your thoughts on this. You did a very good job, I thought, on a macro level of addressing it and why people reacted the way that they do. I want to get your thoughts on a micro level, because I go back to a discussion we had on the show a couple of years ago, TV critic Adam Buckman, right after the Michael Jackson memorial service on TV, which, again, there's a lot of similarities in the way that people reacted to the two passings. And in terms of why it hit people the way that it did, and my sense on a micro level, I want to get your thoughts on this, is that we mourn them, not even necessarily so much for them, although hopefully there's a part of that as well, but because we have so many memories and so many thoughts from our own lives entangled from it. You hear that music, you get a flashback of a million different things that you've experienced in your life, and maybe you feel like some of those memories are dead now that the person's not here, and that you feel a little bit of sadness because that's something that's kind of slipped away from you. Do you kind of get any sense of that in terms of why we react to these huge stars the way that we do?
Oh, sure. And let's call it what it is. Also, it's very hip on social media to really grieve in a huge way. For me,
yeah.
I tried to just take myself out of the picture. Now, was I a fan? To a degree. You know, the loss of David Bowie, even though he was, 13 years Prince's senior, you know, was a little more, because that was music I listened to, you know, with my dad, my uncles, and all of that growing up. You know, Ziggy Stardust was a regular thing playing in the background. Hey, listen to this nonsense, would be my dad yelling at me as I was trying to say, no, here's Guns N' Roses and Metallica. He's like, no, here's good music. So a lot of, you know, that bond that I had with my uncles, my dad, you know, when of all these legends that had passed in 2016, for me, that those were a little more. With Prince, I think part of it, Purple Rain, I mean, how many guys did tribute with Purple Rain? I know a couple of people that have been doing that forever, tying it into their songs. A band that I follow, the Afghan Whigs, have been doing that with one of their songs called Faded for years. But everybody else paid tribute with Purple Rain like they didn't know anything else in the catalog. Come on, dig a little deeper. And I think that was one of the things that became glaringly clear as well. But part of it is, you know, to me, it was that connection to how we look at sports teams, right? You can always remember the worst times or the best times, who you're with when your team won an important game or had some kind of milestone moment, whatever, a 3-home-run game back at Old Comiskey Park for us, you know, home runs hit on the roof, the no-hitters that Jake Arrieta's throwing, whatever. Those are things that bond you, just like a concert, just like, you know, that favorite music act that you have or that album that, that still goes deep in, into your core. And I think, you know, that that's a big part of it is that, that we relate to it. You know, it's what bonds us as much as we see all the divisiveness in so many levels in the newscasts that we watch and the political sphere and so on, that, you know, when we look at a musical artist like this, especially when they've been in the eye for 30 years, that's 30 years of our lives that you're going back to. All right, I remember 1983, 84 as Purple Rain was coming out. And while you may not have been tracking Prince all along the way, because he was pretty good about disappearing when he wanted to after the big fight with the record labels producing things, and maybe you knew they came out, maybe you didn't if you had a friend that was really a Prince super fan, as I've been lucky to have a couple of those in my years. They turned me on to some of the later albums where it wasn't much commercial success because he didn't promote it. He didn't go out and support it. He did some one-off concerts here and there, and Save the Forum here in Los Angeles was a big deal. But it's part of the fabric of our lives. I mean, you know, why do we listen to classic rock radio? The music's good, but it's the stories that go with it.
Absolutely. You're right about that. And to this whole thing about the vault that allegedly has all of his unreleased material in it, I was saying to a friend of mine the other day, because, again, I haven't heard a lot of his more obscure stuff, and I was kind of like, I feel like there's a world of Prince for me to still discover in terms of what's out there. So, you know,
right.
These people that are holding their breath for the vault, I can't quite relate to that. You have to be, like, one of the biggest super fans ever to think, like, you don't have enough of the guy's stuff. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but he was very, very prolific. We're not burned out on it in terms of hearing it all the time on the radio. The stuff that he's put out during his lifetime, I think like 95% of it is going to be fresh forever. So the people that are holding their breath about the vault, I just can't quite relate to that.
Well, I think part of it is you'd like to see the evolution, particularly whatever the last decade. There's a couple of albums in there, but what didn't get released when he was at his peak? And, you know, that's a lot of the mystery about Prince, and I think why his death was he kind of would flash out, he'd be in the big spotlight, and then he'd pull away, right? Immediately, what was, because he was very good and litigious about keeping everything off of social media, right? YouTube, you found like the same 7 or 8 clips. That's why, mm-hmm. You know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, when he's wearing that cool, you know, red fedora or derby, more appropriately, and wailing on the guitar became such a fixture last week, is there's not a lot of that got to stay. As soon as his team found out about it, they usually pulled it. As for me, with what should happen with this vault, I think they should take some gasoline and burn it, because he obviously didn't intend for it to get out. But as we're finding out, with no will, with no paperwork on a lot of this stuff, just kind of flying by the seat of his pants, whoever is in control, his sister and whatever team she assembles, if they want to make a bunch of money out of it, and I guess they're going to turn it into a Paisley Park, into a Graceland-like product at last count, that means at some point you're going to have 100 years worth of music finding its way onto the internet, and every producer under the sun has made it known that they want to be the guy. Just let the man rest in peace and live with his catalog, as you said.
In terms of what he's owed, you'd have a hard time arguing against that. You're absolutely right. And again, it's not like he didn't give us enough during our lifetime, although you gave me something to think about when you pointed out that some of what's in the vault could be older, could be Purple Rain era. Selfishly, that could be kind of interesting. I was just assuming that it was later stuff, but you're right. It could go way back, because who knows what's even in there. So that's a very interesting thing to contemplate as well. When you talk about the memories that the people have bound up in this kind of music and their shared communal experiences, I can tell you, as a point of segue to these NBA playoffs, as a Cleveland sports fan, most of the memories in my lifetime are of bitter misery and of just things going horribly, horribly wrong. So, you know,
yeah, join the Clipper fans that we've heard from the last 48 hours and tell me about it.
Well,
you know, it's funny you segue in that way, but you know, the thing I use is just, like, when you go to a concert, right? Like, when it's your band, man, woman,
uh-huh.
Supergroup, whatever it may be, there's that moment in the show where they play maybe not the full song, maybe it's 45 seconds of a bridge, but it's some obscure track from a third or fourth album after people had their big break, before all the greatest hits albums and the greatest hits and reunion tours, whatever. But that's one that there's 20% of the audience that gets that part, that recognizes that piece of music. And they're looking around to make eye contact with the other people in the crowd that get it. That's what this Prince passing was like, as people tried to pass those gems that the general public missed. That was what was cool about it.
Absolutely, yeah. And as somebody who's been to multiple Rush concerts, and sadly probably no more after Neil Peart's retirement, but I know what you're talking about. They throw in a couple golden oldies here and there, and some people are scratching their heads, and some people are jamming right along with it, and that's the way it goes with a lot of these big-time acts. As far as it goes, and again, from my warped perception as a Cavs fan, I'm hearing this bleeding from the national media about how these playoffs are now OMG tainted because of the injuries. And again, you know, from the wider lens of basketball, yeah, it's not a great thing to have the Clippers big two going down, to have the Curry thing happening whatsoever. But I don't remember this torrent of tears when my team had the big three reduced to the big one in the finals a year ago. There were a lot of people that were kind of noting that somewhat. But again, from my perspective, it seems a little disproportionate when some people are acting like there should be an asterisk on this year's playoffs. I can tell you as a Cavs fan, I will unapologetically take whatever we get out of this. So what's your sense on how these playoffs have taken a really kind of unexpected turn here with these big injuries?
Well, we went for a week where everything was boring. I was writing one of those change.org petitions to have the NBA playoffs altered for the fact that every game was a blowout and unwatchable. We had Raymond Felton return from the dead to put up a huge game and lead the Mavs to one win over the Thunder when Adams couldn't get the ball out of his hand in time. That was our big moment for about the first 6 days of the NBA playoffs. You know, to me, it comes down to this. People are going to say LeBron was still there, and that's going to be the quick way to clap their hands Vegas blackjack dealer style and tell you that's the only argument that matters. I say you play who you play. There's a reason that it's hard to get a ring. There's a reason that it's hard to become a champion and why so few organizations have the depth, the wherewithal, the coaching acumen all the way up to the top to get it done. And everything went right for the Warriors a year ago. And everything went right for the Warriors during this regular season. I would love to have someone give me an explanation as to how there's pretty much a pool of water in a playoff game on a floor to have my man slip and hurt himself the way he did. You should be suing them as Reggie Bush is suing the St. Louis facility for his problems this past year. But the fact is, you know, succeed and proceed, as Calipari taught us, you know, survive and advance, whatever cliche you want to use. That's why it's a long, arduous path. You've got to win 16 playoff games, which is why when they won their 73rd, growing up in Chicago, Bulls fan, not the Bulls apologist, because I'll take him to task as better or best as anybody else. The fact of the matter is they were only halfway done with the journey. 72 is great. Go win the title, because you need to,
right.
You know, you need to have your 89th before you're able to celebrate. So, yeah, does it take a little bit off the playoffs? No, I think it actually enhances it. For Clipper fans, they're gripping, because not only do they lose Chris Paul on a freakish injury, and it looked like the door had opened, right, with Steph Curry's injury and the at least 2 weeks, which every moron decided to say, in 2 weeks he'll be back. No, in 2 weeks he will be reevaluated. Unless there's a miracle, he's not playing in 2 weeks. Chris Paul bends his fingers, gets hurt. Blake Griffin, once again, the quad comes back to haunt him. Now he's a shell of himself, and we presume, and we'll see what happens, but that Portland survives. You want to go to the game tonight here in Los Angeles? Get in, $20.
Wow.
Game five of a quarterfinal, $20.50. For two tickets. You can buy anywhere up to about 100 different listings for under $25. That's how much people have immediately just said, all right, it's done. We're back to being that team. So the playoffs move, playoffs change. If you're the Cavaliers, you're sitting there minding your P's and Q's. I have no doubt that LeBron James has yelled at every member of his team, particularly at J.R. Smith, saying, all right, you've been great so far. Don't lose it. Whatever you're doing, keep the same socks on. Keep wearing the same underpants. We got a good thing going. Don't change it.
$20 tickets. Now, there's the ride-and-die Clipper fan spirit that we've come to know and love over the years. $20 tickets.
But that's sports in general. But certainly this is when you get to the playoffs, this is the exaggerated form. And I hated the fact that it became the same old Clippers narrative, because this wasn't mismanagement. This wasn't Donald Sterling refusing to spend money on players, on amenities, whatever. Steve Ballmer came in, spent money. He built a great bench. They realized last year the deficiencies in their bench. Jamal Crawford, go on down the line. You got Aldrich. You got guys giving you quality minutes all year long. And then to have your two best players go down within about 5 minutes of one another, I mean, that's just the basketball god saying you can't have nice things.
Absolutely. Oh, and you mentioned change.org petitions before. I personally would sign one if the Cavs win the title to get a ring to the Houston Rockets floor boppers. I think they definitely going to deserve one for leaving that aforementioned pool of water out there. And, of course, that was a very big factor in him going down. But I've just had this weird feeling for a while, though, Mike, ever since I read a couple of years ago in Bill Simmons' book of basketball talking about the Portland Trailblazers the year after they won the title, and that people forget that they were actually like way better even the year afterwards. And then Bill Walton, who'd had this long history of potential things with his legs, goes down with a catastrophic injury. And I remember just thinking to myself about Golden State, let's see them make it through the year, because it's a solid 2 years of great luck going back to last year. So if you look at it that way, I mean, the parallels are kind of shocking almost, you know, because Golden State, again, much better this year than they were even the year that they won the title, at least on paper, until that happened. And Curry being a guy where, again, he's had a history of these kind of things in the past, whatever happens, you got to believe he's not going to be close to 100% the rest of the way in the playoffs if he makes it back in.
No, and that's just it. The similarities are eerie, you know, with Bill Walton. Some wonder about the diet that he'd gone on, whether that had left him brittle and so on. With Steph Curry, everybody just got to know him, right? For the first week, I mentioned how boring all the playoff games were. That's why the ankle was such a big deal. Now, as to how bad it was, how severe, they did an MRI and everybody freaked out. It's like, yeah, they give an MRI if the guy's got, you know, if he stubs his toe at the bottom of the stair and you see him stub his toe. I mean, they do it very casually, but it gave us a storyline. And then when he gets back on the court for game four, it's like, all right, we're back to business and the pursuit. And then everything changed on a dime and very similar and eerily similar, especially for a guy that had become the everyman. They just started running all the national commercials for him. Right, the water commercial, amongst others, where all of a sudden Steph Curry's all over my TV, and right as he's blowing up and everybody's jumping on the bandwagon to its highest is when he goes down with the injury. We'll see what Coach of the Year Steve Kerr, after coaching his half a season, what he's got tricks up his sleeves, because he's in for a fight.
Well, another thing, too, another parallel, and again, this may or may not be scientific to draw a parallel here, but I think back to my guy, Kyrie Irving, last year in the playoffs, misses time with an unrelated injury to what eventually took him out. And in this case, you know, you're talking knee versus you're talking ankle. So you're talking different things here with Curry. But when you start to get into distribution of how you're running, how you're kind of treating your legs, whatever, I can't help but wonder how much the first injury kind of softened him up for the second one here. It can't be coincidence. It certainly didn't feel like it was coincidence when it happened to Kyrie Irving last year in the finals, because he was basically playing on spit and wire, it seemed like, at that point anyway. So one wonders the degree to which the first injury paved the way for the second one.
Oh, I'm sure the causation, cause and effect, very much in play here. And weakened ankles, you start favoring. I mean, we've all had different injuries, certainly not with hundreds of millions of dollars, a second title, and immortality, and a, you know, $400 to $500 million shoe deal at stake. But certainly we've all had injuries where you start pulling, and all of a sudden you're like, why does this hurt? Like, well, because you were favoring your other leg so much, or you weren't putting the proper pressure and putting more torque. I have to believe the two are definitely related. I am not a doctor. I do not try to play one on the radio unless I do. And this one is one that we're going to watch because this was the new age. Everybody was already counting titles and getting, you know, fitted for rings on the second hand and wondering how symmetric they'd have to be. And now all of a sudden the brakes have hit.
There's all kinds of parallels going around that are flashing through my head. I'm thinking of watching the recent 30 for 30, that magic moment. That's kind of the way Orlando was looking before their finals with Houston, which went very much awry. So, yeah. Never count the title until it's safely in the bank. And one would have thought Golden State would have learned that a year ago, coming off the mat down 2-1 in the finals, inexplicably as they were, to battle back and win it. But, it looks like they're going to have to live with those nice memories for a while. Another springtime playoff thing that I want to bring up with you here. My condolences to you as a Blackhawk fan. A heck of a series against the Blues. In the end, your Blackhawks joining my Red Wings on the golf course here. I know there's a lot of people who, again, are very, very frustrated, very angry about the defending champions going out in the first round. But I have to say, as somebody who picked St. Louis to win it all before the playoffs started, I kind of wonder how much differently Blackhawks fans may look at this in a couple of weeks. Because, again, if St. Louis has the kind of run in them that I think that they do, do you get the sense as a Blackhawks fan this isn't going to look nearly as bad in the long run? It's just that you picked the wrong team to play in the first round?
I don't think it looks bad now. You look at the Blackhawks season as a whole. There were a lot of issues going on. Not to mention the starting with the Patrick Kane situation and in the organization, what that toll that must have taken as teammates had to hear about it and deal with it. And we'll never know the truth of it all. But certainly that wears. The fact that you've played deep into the playoffs for so many years, eventually that's going to catch up on you. I'm still wondering why nobody ever put a body and took Tarasenko and knocked him on his hindquarters, because he was an agitator to the highest degree, even though his ice time varied quite a bit. But we got to watch the games in their entirety, sitting in the studio. And if we had a video camera portion to the show, people would have seen me die a little bit. People would have seen me reaching for the dump button at certain times. I mean, there was a lot going on in the studio during these games, no question about it. But, two familiar foes, that's the other thing that comes in, familiarity. It's a game of inches, as we saw by the two post shot in the final minute of play. I mean, that's the way playoff hockey should be and why playoff hockey and live hockey is better than anything else. It's just you have to convince the masses to at least go to a game with you. I think the larger issue for the NHL, and congratulations on that pick, by the way. I won't be too bitter at you, and I'll answer the phone next time you call, is the fact that they've lost so many of their large markets. All right, Pittsburgh and Washington play each other, but it's still early in the playoffs overall. Yeah. So how much attention are you going to get for it? Because it's not for a trip to the Stanley Cup final. No, it's, another round. So we get to see Sid the Kid. We get to see Ovechkin. The Kings, after being eliminated out here in Los Angeles last week after all the car flags were put away, they tweeted out that they'd lent their support and were fully behind the Capitals because of Justin Williams, who was the Game 7 hero so many times and beloved in this area. So they put a picture of him in his cap sweater and said, go get it. So I think when you're looking at the larger scale for the NHL, the fact that you lost Detroit, the fact that you lost Chicago, the fact that you lost the Kings in the first round didn't do anybody any favors in terms of that overall appeal. But for those that love hockey, we'll more than get our fill.
Oh, absolutely. And again, not that it matters to NBC, but separately to the north of the border TV deals that the NHL has, it's got to be a real bummer with no Canadian teams up
that's
there.
Right.
Although, again, that's the home of hockey up there in Canada. So there's going to be a certain amount of residual loyalty anyways, just because, whatever majority of the players stem from that country anyways. So you're going to get that. But, yeah, without the teams in, you're right. It's a weird mix going along here. A lot of non-traditional, quote-unquote, powers, if you will, going through it. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. But it's always, as I say, very interesting and very entertaining to follow everything you've got going on at Fox Sports Radio. Mike, whether it's during the week on the show with Jason Smith, whether it's on Sundays with Dan Beyer, And again, congratulations and best luck with firing it up again with the new moves you've been making over at SwollenDome.com. That Prince video that you had, the commentary on it was a great step in that. Look forward to the content that you're going to have there and continuing to follow your career as always. Thank you so much for coming on the show, my man.
Oh, always a pleasure. We cover a lot of ground. And this week, Dan and I had done a mock draft, mocking the worst.
I enjoyed it.
five Cleveland Brown picks. We could have done more. There wasn't an obvious mistake in the first, they traded back in. So it made for a good running bit.
That's right. And always trading back out of good spots here. I still have a bruise on my fist from when we traded back to not take Julio Jones. Although, again, we clearly would have misused him in retrospect. But, so much folly. That's the thing, right? You can always look at it like, oh, you just would have wasted him anyways. But, have to see how it plays out. I'm looking forward to this year's draft with my usual brand of trepidation as a Browns fan. But we'll see how it plays out. And, again, I look forward to catching up with you in the future on the show. Thank you so much, Michael Harmon. Again, such big fans of yours here and always appreciate getting the chance to talk to you.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. Talk to you again soon.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 722.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.